Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Ladies and gentlemen, joining us now is a man who's got a massive brain.
Mike Florio.
He used to be a lawyer, then he decided to take his talents to the internet.
NBC Sports.
I'm sorry, I'm late. I was talking to Robert Kraft.
Pro Football Talk.
I wouldn't listen to some of those people out there, especially guys like Mike Florio.
Mike Florio with Dan Bernstein and Leila Rahimi on The Score.
Let's talk some football with Mike Florio as we do at 10 o'clock on Wednesdays. You can find him on Twitter at Pro Football Talk. He's on the Alpamonte Nissan Hotline, Alpamonte Nissan. On North Avenue in Melrose Park at apnissan.com. A very happy day to you, Mike Florio, as within moments, a long national nightmare is apparently coming to an end.
I don't know what you're talking about.
It's funny, we're doing this, and we all have one eye, wherever we are right now, we all have one eye on the proceedings and watching everything that's going on. It's a very strange place to be as we take this all in and talk football. But we have games. We have some pretty representative championship games here. I'm looking forward to both.
Yeah, I think they're excellent. I think they're the four best teams right now. Four great quarterbacks, two old, two young, and should be, hopefully, two classic games, and it's a shame that two of these teams are going to go home for the season. But that just adds to the moment. The Packers and the Buccaneers, both good enough to represent the NFC. The Bills and the Chiefs, both good enough to represent the AFC. The urgency there for these four quarterbacks to either add another ring, as in the case of three of them, or to add a first ring, as in the case of Josh Allen, it should make for a very, very compelling 6 or 7 hours on Sunday. And this is why I ultimately rein in my desire for football chaos when there's the possibility of an upset, like the Browns possibly beating the Chiefs or whatever the case may be. You want the best four teams at the end of the day for the conference championships. We've seen it too many times where there's an upset that we're like, yeah, that's great. And then the next week, the team that pulled off the upset falls flat on its face. We want the best teams against the best teams to determine who gets to the Super Bowl.
Well, and to that end, it's also an example of the best at their respective quarterback positions. If you were to name four of the top quarterbacks in the league, it's hard to argue against the level of play out of all four of them right now, Mike.
And what's amazing is, based on the regular season, you'd probably put Tom Brady fourth, but over the past several weeks, his numbers have improved dramatically. His completion percentage is dropping, but he's getting the ball down the field. The average per attempt, the average for completion, they keep going up. It's working finally. They're getting the offense to where Bruce Arians envisioned it. It's taken time. They've got 18 games that they've played with Tom Brady at quarterback. He trusts these receivers all the way down to guys like rookie Tyler Johnson. Trusted him on a key 3rd-and-11 play where Johnson made a lunging, twisting, diving catch to keep the drive alive that ultimately resulted in the Buccaneers going up 23-20. So Brady trusts his guys, and there's just a swagger that I think Brady's presence is giving to the team. I think that this is the intangible value of having Tom Brady in your huddle, on your sideline, in your locker room. The defense found some higher level of performance in the second half when it looked like the Saints were ready to pull away. And I think a lot of that traces to knowing that number 12 is your quarterback, even though he's never on the field when you are.
it sure seems to me like the Chiefs are going to run every last bit of the NFL concussion euphemism playbook to ensure that Patrick Mahomes is on the field. We have the initial lack of acknowledgement that it's even a concussion, and they say, well, maybe it's technically kind of a concussion, but it's a nerve that got compressed. Anything to say that it's something other than what we think and probably know it is, I will be very, very surprised if we don't get news relatively soon that he's fine enough and that he's playing.
Yeah, he'll get cleared and he'll play. He's not going to miss the game. As Brett Favre said earlier this week, even if he's got three or four great days and wakes up with a headache on Friday or Saturday, he's not going to tell anybody. That's just not the way it works. He's going to want to play. And even though the protocol puts great power in the hands of the independent neurologist, I don't know how independent the neurologist is when the league clearly wants the guy to play. It's one thing for the team to want the guy to play, so you can't have a team doctor make the decision. The league wants and needs Patrick Mahomes on that field on Sunday for the Kansas City Chiefs. So there is some subtle pressure on the neurologist, but he's not going to be stumbling around on the field. He's going to look fine, right? We're not going to be able to say, boy, they shouldn't have cleared him for this game. So there's not going to be anything we can really point to and say the league got this wrong. Now, the question that I have, how will the Chiefs' offense change? Will Andy Reid run the ball with the quarterback on third and one? Will Patrick Mahomes take off with the ball when no one's open downfield? Will he throw caution to the wind, or will he be thinking, I just had a concussion last week, I need to be more careful? And in that vein, will the Bills adjust how they defend the Chiefs if they think that the Mahomes running the ball, a very important part of the overall arsenal of Patrick Mahomes, isn't part of it on Sunday? So there's some layers and levels and ripple effects to this on Sunday, and that's going to be interesting to watch. How active will Mahomes be as a runner, especially with that toe that was clearly bothering him, and how prepared will the Bills be for a Mahomes who maybe doesn't run as much as he has in the past?
That was one of the big questions during the game from a lot of people, was why was Patrick Mahomes, who clearly had an issue with his toe, put in that position anyway with that run-pass option? It was almost like a double bad situation occurring.
You could see between every play, he was putting the weight of his left foot on the outside. His toe was pointed, or his foot was pointed inward with that big toe to help him keep the weight off of it. And in a weird sort of a way, getting off the field when he did, for reasons unrelated to the toe, may have helped him avoid doing greater damage to the toe if he had stayed in the rest of the game. So, you know, they're downplaying the toe, as they should and as they will and as teams often do. But, yeah, they continued to put that toe at risk. And I think that the toe, by the time we get to Sunday, is something to keep as much of an eye on as whether or not Patrick Mahomes takes another blow to the head and whether he gets up quickly from it.
The news this morning came out that Philip Rivers is going to hang him up, that he had his time as a Colt and that's it. And if you go to profootballreference.com and you see the statistical similarity scores, he's on the same career line as Elway, Marino, Tarkenton, Ryan, Favre, Montana, Breeze, Rodgers, Roethlisberger, and Anderson. A pretty heady place for him. But of course, this league being how it is, people are saying the whispers have begun that, is Andrew Luck coming back? Do they know something? I know as far as the Bears are concerned, it's just now another team that's looking for a quarterback.
And first of all, I got to respect the willingness of Philip Rivers to retire on a day when, if he does go to Twitter, all he's going to see all day long is good riddance, get the hell out of here, even though it's not directed to him.
Right.
But you know, the thing about Rivers, he was great. He's fifth all time in yards and passing touchdowns. But he was never the greatest of his era. He never got to a Super Bowl. There were always much better quarterbacks. Peyton Manning, where they had the 30-second discussion yesterday at the Hall of Fame voting session where, you know, all you have to say is Peyton Manning and you move on to the next guy. So it was Manning, it was Brady, it was Breeze, it's Rodgers, it's Ben Roethlisberger, it's anyone who's won a Super Bowl since 2004, because Rivers didn't get there. But you're right, in the aftermath, what do the Colts do now? It's another team that's clearly looking for a quarterback, and I don't think Andrew Luck is coming back, but I think the Colts are going to look at every option they possibly can to try to figure out who takes that offense over. And think about the last few years they've had. They had Luck, and then they didn't. Jacoby Brissett's the guy until he isn't. And they get Rivers for 1 year, and now they got to figure out something else.
Oh, it's so prophetic when you say, we had Luck, and then we didn't. I think all of us could say that in some way, shape, or form, Mike. It does make us all key in on the availability of quarterbacks, though, and what that could possibly mean here in Chicago. What is your take on just the quarterback supply and demand?
Well, one thing that's happened in recent years is we see more rookie quarterbacks and young quarterbacks do well quickly in the NFL. It's created a free agency market or a veteran trade market that wasn't there before. And I think this year there's a lot of intrigue, just like last year. And Tom Brady's the one who sucked all the oxygen out of the room when he made it to the market. But there were plenty of quarterbacks available last year, like Philip Rivers. This year, there's going to be plenty of quarterbacks available in free agency. There may be some trade options out there, whether it's Jimmy Garoppolo, whether it's Kirk Cousins, if the Vikings finally wake up to the reality that he's not going to take them where they've been trying to go for the last 60 years. And it gets very intriguing. And then you throw on top of it the ever-growing appearance that Deshaun Watson wants out of Houston. And that becomes the guy that everyone should be lining up for, even though it's going to be very expensive from a draft pick standpoint to try to get him. And Sims and I spent a lot of time today talking about possible destinations. And, you know, the Bears are on the list. And it would be very intriguing to see what Deshaun Watson would do with Matt Nagy and what kind of an offense they could craft together and how much it would eventually look like the Chiefs. The problem is you have to give up so much to get him. It ties a hand behind your back to put a team around him that's going to be good enough to get it done.
Don't do this to us, Mike. He's not coming here. And, you know, even if they had a competitive package to offer, with all that they've been through, with all that we know about what happened and didn't happen with him being scouted that year, and what we know about why would he ever approve of a trade to the Bears?
Well, and that's a great point. And because he has the no trade clause, he can put the kibosh on any possible trade that is raised with the Texans. And I think if the Texans are going to do this, now the first thing they should do is try to fix their relationship with Deshaun Watson. But if they acknowledge it's just not fixable, you go to Watson, you say, here's a sheet of paper, give us a list of all the teams that you would play for. And then basically you have an auction for his contract. And there's a sweet spot there somewhere. See, that's the concern if you're Deshaun Watson. You don't want to go to a team and have a great season and be 4-12 again. You don't want to go to a team that ends up mortgaging the future and compromising the present in order to put competent players around Deshaun Watson. So you don't want that team to give up 3 first-round picks if you can avoid it if you're Deshaun Watson. This is not going to be an easy thing for anyone to figure out. But the Bears are on the list, whether or not it goes that way. And you're probably right. Deshaun Watson likely won't want to go to Chicago because Chicago kind of gave him the cold shoulder when he was coming out 4 years ago. But still, you know, I think every team out there, other than a team that has a clear-cut franchise quarterback, needs to at least run through the scenarios and ask itself, is this something we should be looking at?
Are there any other names, just to appease Dan, Mike, because he doesn't
Well, I mean,
think
Jimmy Garoppolo is an Illinois guy. He's an Illinois guy.
Thank you.
Right, Eastern
That's
Illinois, Illinois
idea.
Native, and here's the thing about Garoppolo, and I don't care what he does when he plays. Quarterbacks need to be available to play each week, week in, week out. Tom Brady, but for taking a low hit from Bernard Pollard week one of the 2008 season when the Patriots were hosting the Chiefs and missing the full year with a torn ACL, Tom Brady is always available to play. That's part of the obligation of being a franchise quarterback. And Garoppolo, I wouldn't want to keep him if I were the 49ers, and I wouldn't want to touch him if I were any other team. Remember back in 2016 when he had his 4-game audition, what happened? He got injured in the second game, and it was Jacoby Brissett the rest of the way. You can't trust a quarterback who can't stay healthy, so scratch him off the list too.
Good advice, Mike Florio. Thank you. We will let you get back to more significant things. Appreciate your time as always.
Have a great day.
Thanks, Mike.
That's Mike Florio, Pro Football Talk. We'll turn our attention to the Cubs next. Maddie Lee covers the Cubs for NBC Sports Chicago, and she'll give us her perspective on everything that's going on. They keep finding starting pitchers of theirs and who sign elsewhere, and some reuniting with some familiar friends. So all of that is on the table with some Cubs talk next on The Score.
Well, I don't know if really we are here. You know, it's everything is happening around in a short season. But honestly, I don't have time right now to, you know, pay attention in the free agency. So I'm really excited. You can imagine how I'm feeling right now. And it's good to see you guys again, you know, work in the media. So it's a good point for me to be back. And I'm really happy, and I just want to show my work.
That, dare I say, on this day of all days, was Q. Not that Q. No, and if it were that Q, I think it would surprise a lot of people if he sounded like that. But that was Jose Quintana, who indeed now has rejoined Joe Maddon and the Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim on a one-year, $8 million deal. He is gone, and John Lester is gone, and we can talk some Cubs because there's a lot going on in the Cubs world right now. And joining us is Maddie Lee of NBC Sports Chicago. She's on Twitter at Maddie_M_Lee. She's on the Alpamonte Nissan hotline. Alpamonte Nissan on North Avenue in Melrose Park, or at apnissan.com. She's on the Twitch stream as well. You can see her at twitch.tv/Chicago670 The Score. Maddie, how are you?
I'm good. Thanks so much for having me on.
Yeah, Maddie, it is good to see you again. Former coworker, of course. And I have to start with just noticing your column yesterday for NBC Sports Chicago and how profound it was. And the headline is, Mets firing Porter is a start, but sports industry has a lot of work to do. I couldn't agree more, but speaking from your personal experience, you said that's something that you don't normally put out there. What went through your mind when you heard about everything going on?
Yeah, first of all, thanks for shouting out the column. It was not surprising, which I think you hear from a lot of women, and which is probably the saddest part of all of this. I read the story from ESPN, amazing reporting done by them, and, you know, was emotionally drained. And I was like, I'm going to sit down, I'm going to process this, and I'm just going to write something tomorrow. But I tried to go to bed, things kept running through my mind. I ended up writing that column mostly on my notepad in my phone, just because I think for a lot of women, you see reflections of what you've gone through. Like, I have never had explicit pictures sent to me by a source. That is absolutely inexcusable, and I'm glad that they fired him. That was absolutely the best thing to do in that situation. But you do have to deal with this weird line between sometimes you have sources who don't understand what the professional relationship looks like for whatever reason when they're dealing with whether it's all women or a specific woman. And you have to toe that line between, okay, I want to have this source, I want to be well-informed about the team that I'm covering, but I shouldn't have to deal with this type of harassment. So a lot of that was going through my head as the news broke. And even in the days since, as we've seen, yes, it's a great step for the Mets to take a strong stance on this, but it's not just a one-time thing. It's a very systematic issue. And teams across the league have to be, and really workplaces across the country have to be aware that things like this happen all the time and aren't necessarily reported.
Maddie, I'm really interested in the actual mechanics of the Cubs investigation, of how hand in hand this is done with MLB. And my experience with such things is that businesses will, when they self-investigate, will, whether or not they know they're doing it, will impose limitations that shield them from finding out all the things they might not want to know, even with fail-safes in place. Do you think this is going to be an independent group that will be doing it? Will it be Cubs employees doing it? Because, as I was saying early in the show, what they can do is try to indemnify as many women in and around the team as possible and simply begin, start by talking only to women and getting honest thoughts as you can, and then working outward from there.
Yeah, so far they have been a little, I don't want to say cagey or secretive, but they haven't been completely open about what this investigation is going to look like moving forward. I'm glad that MLB is investigating. I'm glad that the Cubs are investigating. There are some challenges in that, you know, people have left since since 2016 when this happened. And so they're going to have to get in contact with some people who aren't with the organization. You still have, you know, plenty of people who have been at the organization for that time. And so, like you said, the fact that they were in leadership positions then doesn't reflect well on them. And so you'd hope that they do take this absolutely seriously. But it is so important to talk to women, to make sure that you get their opinions, not just as we're going through this investigation, but you had Mets President Sandy Alderson saying, you know, that they got glowing reviews about Jared Porter when they're going through the interview process. And then he was asked a follow-up, well, you know, how many women did you talk to? And they didn't. So I think bringing it back to the Cubs moving forward, as they're going into their GM search, that's a lesson that they can learn, that you can't just ask other white men in power about what they think about your potential candidates. A, hire a woman or a person of color if they're the best person for the job. B, as you're going through the process, make sure you're talking to women, make sure you're talking to people of color, because it doesn't necessarily mean everything. It's just a bunch of white dudes thinks that this person is great.
I know we're going to get to a couple of issues that will always be popular Cubs talk, like, say, pitching in a moment. But just to wrap this up, I wonder what's next when it comes to even having the investigation. What do they find? How is it going to affect anything if they do? Because it was so long ago, relatively speaking.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, the investigation will be working with MLB, and that'll affect whether Jared Porter can come back into baseball, for one. But I think that the Cubs should take this as an opportunity to really reflect on what Cubs culture means and what they want it to mean moving forward. And really be honest about, do we need to make changes? Because, you know, the fact that this happened 4.5 years ago doesn't mean, necessarily mean that it's not happening today, even if people have moved on. And I haven't had any bad experiences. I've only been here for a year. But that's some things that they need to really dig into and really reflect on and have an honest conversation about as an organization. Sure, the main perpetrator of this event is gone and out of our organization. But do we need to make some changes regardless of that fact?
So let's talk about pitching as we look at the baseball side of things. I am not that unhappy that John Lester's gone, because I don't think this rotation needed another fastball that averages less than 90 miles an hour. And I don't know where enough velocity is going to come from in this starting staff, or really what they're trying to do working with this tiny, tiny margin for error with Hendricks and Mills and Davies and all these guys that have to be so perfect. At some point, they're going to need somebody who throws hard, aren't they?
Yeah, I mean, and not even just because of, I think that those guys have proved, hey, you don't have to have velocity to succeed, but you do need diversity within your rotation to succeed. You can't just have slow guy after slow guy after slow guy after slow guy, because after 3 days of seeing basically the same pitcher, that's an advantage for hitters, right? I think where John Lester officially leaving, right? We knew that he wasn't getting his option picked up, but officially going to another team, where that hurts Cubs fans is seeing, hey, this is a guy who we've loved, who has really embraced Chicago, who didn't have that high of a price tag, it turns out. And the Cubs weren't willing to spend the money to bring him back. So I think, obviously, as they look forward, it would be nice to add some velocity back into that rotation. But also, Lester had some things like his presence in the clubhouse, both for bringing along younger pitchers, but also just the whole team as in general, that could have been very valuable as you move on to, we're going to have a young rotation coming up. You know, you have a guy like Edward Alvarez, who we all expect to be a regular starter, and he's going to need some of those veteran guys to help move him along. And, you know, Yu Darvish is gone, so I guess Kyle Hendricks is the guy there.
I also wonder what that means for Braylon Marquez, who was highlighted in the Baseball America Top 100 Prospects. He was one of two of the Cubs. And what prospects other than those two could possibly end up seeing a lot of playing time this season?
Yeah, Braylon Marquez is a guy who we got to see one outing from, and he was very wild, if you guys remember the White Sox series. But, like, you see so much potential, right? You see that fastball, and you practically want to salivate, right? He is a guy who they're very excited about, but who isn't going to be ready to slide into that starting rotation at the beginning of the season. So he's a guy who potentially could make some sort of impact on the big league roster, whether it's, a spot start or joining the bullpen for a bit. But he definitely is a work in progress and has a way to go development-wise, and you don't want to speed him along just because you don't have other pitchers, right? So he's a guy that they're really excited about, but I don't think you can count on day one sliding into the rotation. Another guy that comes to mind in terms of where the Cubs have some thinness in their roster, should I say, is Miguel Amaya, catcher. But he's another guy who the Cubs need to get another backup catcher because they're excited about him. He's great. But is he ready to pitch in as much as a Victor Caratini did? I don't think so.
We're talking with Matty Lee of NBC Sports Chicago on the Bernstein Rahimi Show on Sports Radio 670 The Score. Give us a reset just in general where we stand on potential trades and whose phone is ringing for whom, because everything got real quiet after the arbitration deadline with some of these names that we've heard, whether it's Bryant or Contreras or Baez and any number of fringe rumors that we've heard. Is it as quiet as it seems, or are there big names still in play?
I believe there are still big names in play. Obviously, they can't roll out the roster that they have right now. You look at Wilson Contreras as a guy who they can get a lot back from. He's definitely the guy who could be their biggest trade asset in terms of what return that they could get. And, we've seen that they're focused on really bolstering that farm system. He's a guy that you could get great prospects back from. Chris Bryant, obviously, that name is still out there. I wouldn't be surprised if he was on the roster come spring training, but he's also a guy who I think every team knows if they want to go get him, the Cubs will listen.
And Maddie, I know we talked to you a lot about baseball, but you also covered the Oklahoma City Thunder for quite some time. Real quick,
I did.
James Harden on the Nets, good or bad?
I am fascinated to see how that turns out, because obviously that duo is working really well right now. We'll see once they become a trio how, I know everyone keeps saying this, but can they share the ball? They are all very ball dominant players. Can they share the ball? The talent is there. I think that they're the favorite in the East, but whether that much talent can shake out to become a really balanced group, we'll see about that one.
Yeah, I just like the fact that
you and Darnell are the ones that I was curious about, man. You and Darnell, both former Thunder reporters.
Well, and Shaquille O'Neal said, he said he went from the Splash Brothers to the Dribble Brothers, and it's just a matter of it's one thing if the ball's always in the air, and now just everybody's just standing around dribbling. He's going to have to figure out how to fit in. Maddie, this is great stuff. We appreciate it. Look forward to talking again soon.
Thanks so much. Thanks for having me.
That is Maddie Lee of NBC Sports Chicago. We have the Midday Midway coming up straight ahead. I have a Florida story that's just very Florida, and it sounds like it's okay, but if it's, it's Florida, everything is going to go badly. And I don't know how to set up this other quick story other than it being one of these crime stories with just a lot of details, a lot going on.
Llama on the lam.
Llama on the lam. All of that
That's it.
Is next on Midday Midway on The Score.
the first half or the second half. You know, it's they're two equal times.
Now, Midway.
The Midday Midway.
One, two.
Midway, the most important of the year.
Three, four.
The most exciting thing on the Midway.
Five, six, seven, eight.
Our objective is Midway.
9, 10.
You guys gotta meet me halfway out there.
So real, you can almost feel it.
The Midday Midway with Bernstein and Rahimi. Middays, 9 a.m. to noon on The Score.
A historic Wednesday here, and we have reached the Midday Midway. We did pretty serious first hour talk about what is next in these steps for the Cubs and how they're going to investigate how the Jared Porter scandal was allowed to happen on their watch and what they're going to learn and how they're going to want to learn it or not. We will learn a lot by how they approach it. We also replayed Jennifer Sturger Decker of Radio.com, an interview that she did yesterday on the Danny Parkins Show with Parkins and Spiegel that was really raw and true and revealing. And I think there are a lot of businesses, a lot of companies, a lot of bosses that should listen to that. Mike Florio talked football, and Matty Lee talked Cubs and a little bit of basketball. If you've been following this segment for a long time, you know that Florida invasive animal species are a long-standing theme. And we have talked about everything from the Burmese pythons to the aquatic monitor lizards, to armadillos, and everything else, feral cats, everything that has affected Florida. And that's why I always think, even when something seems okay and cute, there's always some other angle to it. Apparently, there has been a colony of African vervet monkeys living in Dania Beach, right near the Fort Lauderdale-Hollywood International Airport. And they've been there for decades, but apparently the group has grown and more people have been noticing them lately. Missy Williams of the Dania Beach Vervet Project, not to be confused with the Alan Parsons Project, she was not a member of that, she's able to create a sanctuary for the colony of 40 monkeys near the Park and Go, an off-airport parking operator. This is according to Local 10. Dave Winquist, the manager at Park and Go, said the monkeys are regular, friendly visitors. They're always looking for something to eat. They like bananas and peanuts. He says they're very nice. I've never had a problem with any of them. Hanging from a fence near the cars, there's a sign: please do not touch or hand feed the monkeys for your own safety. And one of the workers near the sanctuary says, if you leave your car window open and there's something in there, they will climb in your car and go for it. Food or chips or something like that. They all have names. There's the researchers from Florida Atlantic University have named them all. There's a database with files for each of the monkeys. Their ancestors escaped from the Dania chimpanzee farm in the late 1940s. It was opened by a member of the Roosevelt family. They were importing primates from Africa for biomedical use. There have been no reports of property damage or aggression, and unlike different monkey species in northern Florida, vervets do not carry herpes. So that's, I guess, good. And the Fish and Wildlife Conservation Commission will fine or arrest anyone who's feeding, trapping, or harassing the monkeys. So it sounds good now, but I'm kind of worried about what's going to happen. They have to be on our side if and when all of the invasive species decide to get together and carry out their nefarious plot. I hope if we do occasionally toss them a banana here and there, we can be on the good side when all these animals start to attack.
These Florida airport beach monkeys sound pretty cool. I like them. I think they sound pretty fun. I would hang out with them.
By the way, we have a new president and vice president of the United States of America. Sorry.
And we have a llama on the lam. Well, it was previously on the lam. This is in Newburyport, Massachusetts. I know you're shocked that it's Massachusetts. A passerby spotted a wandering llama in a field off of an interstate in Massachusetts. With the help of an animal control officer, he brought it to a farm for safekeeping. Patrick Boddy was driving in Newport when he spotted the male gray and white llama, stopped his truck, and approached it on Monday, the Boston Globe reported. The llama acted very chill, according to him, as he walked up to him.
Well, aren't
and
they
he
generally...
said, I had my arm around the... What'd you say?
Aren't llamas generally kind of chill? I mean, I know they spit at people occasionally,
know.
But so do baseball managers.
According to Napoleon Dynamite, you would think that would be the case. The llama
right.
Tina on Napoleon Dynamite was pretty cool. She ate some ham, I think. But so this chill llama was all right, and he said he had his arm around llama, kind of calming him down. It was just really gentle and friendly. I knew it must have been some kind of pet or something. So they called a bunch of farms to see if anybody was missing a llama, and everybody said no. So now the llama's hanging out, got some food, got some water, and it has a new home. So llama on the lam is on the lam no more.
The same can be said for these criminals, and I think it's better if I present this largely without comment, because it's all in the details here. The headline is, man posing as cop busted for stealing donut from Utah 7-Eleven. So you have the whole optics of a guy pretending to be a cop and stealing a donut, but I'm just going to read this. This is Lehi, Utah. He was really getting into the park. A Utah man wanted for a string of crimes was arrested after stealing a donut from a 7-Eleven while dressed up as a cop, police said. Officers in Lehi ended up tracking down Daniel Mark Wright, 47, after getting a call from a convenience store clerk who said a man wearing a sheriff's deputy jacket had stolen a donut earlier in the day and left in a white Ford truck. After looking at surveillance video, the cops tracked the truck down at a nearby motel where the manager led them to Wright's room. Officers knocked on the door and made contact with Wright as he opened the door, and he was asked to step outside. A female was also inside the bedroom and was identified as Christian Olson. While the door was open, the police report said, I observed the green Salt Lake County Sheriff's jacket hanging in the entryway closet, the police officer wrote in the arrest report. Wright admitted he'd been at the 7-Eleven, but he refused to answer any questions about the truck, which officers determined was stolen. Police arrested Wright for impersonating an officer and receiving a stolen vehicle and theft. Olson was arrested for receiving a stolen vehicle. There's more. The pair claimed they had received the car from Adalberto Ozeta, who was arrested over the weekend after a 60-mile pursuit across several counties in Utah. Investigators allege the trio is involved in, quote, extensive criminal activity, including vehicle burglary and vehicle theft. The arrest reports state that Wright, Olson, and Ozeta are under investigation in a federal racketeering probe. Ozeta was wanted for killing a pedestrian in a hit-and-run in early January. He was busted after leading cops on a high-speed pursuit and then trying to hide in a pile of manure after his car got stuck.
And
after being taken into custody, Ozeta claimed he had swallowed a bag of heroin. So he was taken to a local hospital where he managed to slip his cuffs and briefly escape. And he was picked up a short time afterwards. So
I'm sure he smelled great.
Right. I would just say to be continued on this one. This could be the gift that keeps on giving. So we will keep our midday midway eyes trained very carefully on Utah.
And that's a story we'll continue to track. That's a way you say it in the news.
Is that how you say it? That's a story. This is a developing story we'll continue to track. Is that how it goes? Because you've done hard news. I have not.
Yeah. You make it sound like drugs. You're like, you've done hard
and
news.
And you've done hard drugs. Well, no, the closest I met, my internship at Channel 2 in 1989 was technically in the news department. And I did go on. It was not a sports internship, but nothing on the air or close to it. I just answered the phones and talked to crazy people. So pretty much like my job now.
That happens at all local news stations. You get crazy people calling. And I was a news reporter in East Texas, so like close to Louisiana, which is different from just Texas, as I found out, and Sherman, Texas, which is north of the Dallas area, mostly southern Oklahoma, that's where the Tiger King Ranch was located. Like if he turned on the TV, he would see our station. My
no
boss
pardon.
Was on Tiger King, which I think I've mentioned.
No,
not to bring it back to Tiger
for Joe.
King.
No pardon for old. What was it? What's his actual last name? I forgot. But Joe Exotic is still in prison, sadly enough. And the limo forlornly drove away. And that's the Midday Midway. We do it many days around this time. And next up, it's Wednesday during football season. That means Hub. And that means in his second segment, he's going to take your calls. So get him lined up. 312-644-6767. The Bears are still looking for a defensive coordinator. We'll talk about that and more. So keep it here. Bernstein and Rahimi on the score.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.